test mic. Hey, everybody, please put your hands together. Welcome to On the Move. When I say poetry, you say rocks. Poetry. 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 When I say spoken, you say words. Spoken. Spoken. When I say to be, you say heard. To be. To be. To be. If this is your very first time at the Folklife Festival, make some noise. All right, first timers, you're just in time because this is our 50-year anniversary. My name is Reggie Kibiko. I am the curator of this program called Capturing Fire. If you don't know what Capturing Fire is, it is an annual queer spoken word slam and summit that happens in Washington, D.C., going into its eighth year. We've had phenomenal poets. As part of On the Move, you're going to be hearing stories, spoken word poetry by people of color, children of immigrants, trans and queer identified performers. So we invite you to listen to our stories. The takeaway message of On the Move: since the beginning, American culture has been shaped by the movement of people to and within the United States. Recent immigrants, with those who preceded them by generations or by millennia, have contributed to the vitality of this country. An understanding of the resilience of heritage, the many shapes of community and identity, and the creative potential and tensions between past and future. We have three phenomenal spoken word poets who you will be hearing from in the house. We have Gary Kay. We have Dia Bowie. And we have Jerica Escoto. So if there are any Filipino folks, make some noise, Filipinos. All right, excellent. So I'm gonna kick off this piece. This is dedicated to everyone who's had to check a box. The government asks me to check one if I want money. I say, how could you ask me to be one race? I stand proudly before you, a fierce Filipino who knows how to belt hard gospel songs played to African drums at a Catholic mass, and loving the music to suffering beats and lashes from men's eyes in the capital streets. Southeast DC with its sleepy crime, my mother nursed patients from 7 to 9, patients gray from the railroad riding past civil rights. I walked their tracks when I entertained them at the chapel and made their canes pillars of percussion to my heavy gospel. My comedy out loud, laughing about our shared stolen experiences of the South. Would it surprise you if I told you my blood was delivered from north of Portuguese vessels who gave me spiritual stones and the turn in my eyes, my father's name when they conquered the Pacific Isles? My hair is black and thick as negrito, growing abundant as sampaguita, flowers defying civilization like Filipino pygmies that dance in the mountain. I could give you an epic about my ways of life for my look, and you want me to fill it in one square box? How could you tell me to fill Gilgamesh with all of its waters in one square box? From what shape or integer do you count existing identities, grant loans for the mind, or Crayola white census sheets? There's no one kind to fill for anyone. You tell me who I am, what gets the most money, and I'll sing that song like a one-man caravan. I know arias from Naples, Tunis and Accra, lullabies from welfare, food stamps and nature. And you want me to sing one song? I have danced jigs with Jim Crow and shuffled my hips to the sonic guitar of Clapton and Hendrix, waltzed with dead lovers, skipped to bamboo sticks, ballet kabuki and mime katakali, arribaderci da rumba and tapped in Pan Alley. And you want me to dance the Bhagavad Gita on a box too small for a Thumbelina thin diva? I'll check other. Wow, it feels so good to say I'm Filipino and queer right on the mall. Without any further ado, you will hear in this order, in a round robin style, a spoken word poem, poetry. You'll hear from Gary Kay, Dia Bowie, and Jerrica Escoda. Without any further ado, let's give it up for Gary Kay.
Hello, Smithsonian Folklife Festival. How you doing? Do we have folks here who are not from the D.C. area? Welcome to folks who are not from the D.C. area. D.C. folks, can we clap it up for our visitors joining us in our community today? My name is Gary Kay. I would like to start with a poem called How to Be a Model Minority. They say be still, be small, stay seated, stop squirming. This may be your life, but they'll say what it's made of. They say a little sweetener on a spoon will make it smooth when the meds go down. They say they have the recipe to make you function, to pop, pop, snap till you crackle. They say poetry is dead, or should be, because words are useless. Just whining and rhyming, hypnotizing, justifying, proselytizing. They don't see the uprising, but why would they? They say dissent is a sign that something bad is up your sleeve. When bent kneed, cuffed, and pleading, you dare to ask why. They say you belong with a he, and you with a she, and who makes the rules? We, because they say you don't know what's good for you. They say you're the different, the misstep, the wrong color of the rainbow. They say they don't know where you belong, but it's not here. Because this is their story, and you weren't there, not even a footnote. Defeated, deleted, and then not even indexed. They say your name never came up. To be a model minority, just keep your mouth shut or open it, and together we will lift ourselves up.
It's a blessing to be here. Thank you so much. As I'm giving y'all appreciation for being here, I'm going to lower this mic. Okay, that's all it goes. That's all it does. Once again, my name is Dia Bowie. I'm really proud to be here, queer and Vietnamese. Queer and Vietnamese. So I want to thank Reggie for bringing us out here, Capturing Fire. It's such a blessing to share the stage with the folks that you'll be hearing from. So the first poem I want to share with you is about love. Can we all agree that we are constantly on the move, and at the center of that is love? So here's a poem about love. I call you love, not because I don't appreciate your given name, but when cynicism has us believing that love is fleeting, at least I know love has your permanent address. In a world where love has become a word we use too readily at the end of letters, you learn to not let yourself be sealed in complacency like stone walls. Echoing queer culture displaced in a generation and breaking bones and sounds were the only ways that we could tear ourselves out of the restraints of a straitjacket, so we learn from history. Build no emotional walls, because there are too many and too high in Gaza, where former neighbors gaze into barriers to remember every hello before the concrete goodbye, and must look upward towards heaven in hopes that their prayers are still friends on the other side. Because spiritually, love knows no boundaries. Unlike the heavily guarded borders edging the ends of Mexico to the beginnings of San Diego, where families desperately cross to get to their borders in hopes of their dreams, but only meet at the ends of Minutemen and the sharpshooters. And there I know, love. So I'll take a minute then to think before I ever use my sharp tongue against you, because when I first met you, I was desperately crossing to get to my dreams too. And when we find love, make no mistake that the edges of these fingertips will memorize every natural curve in every climatic region, so when I write love poems, even the ink can understand you between the sheets. I call you love not because it's the sweetest thing to call you, but if I could write your name across the sky, even rainbows will know how to fall in love with you. Without clouded judgment, they will understand that whether seasons change, you are as constant as streams of consciousness. So as we turn on the news, history will continue to repeat itself, so there's nothing new about broken hearts, shattered dreams, and the ongoing violence. So maybe if we just sew our voices together, creative freedom quilts to wrap our struggles and keep them warm at night and in the morning. You can whisper into my ears. Strum your vocal cords like violence and crush the eardrums of the ongoing violence, because your love, like music, can even teach enemies to sound like friends.
Thank you.
What's going on, Folk Life? How are y'all? Good, good. My name is Jerrica Scotto. I am Filipino, trans, queer, and I just moved here from San Diego. So I'm very proud to be here on the National Mall. The night I came out to my Filipino father, it was the same night I prepared myself to no longer be somebody's child. My father's silence resembled the way the earth sounds when we are already 6 feet underground, and for a split second, dying seemed a lot better than facing a man who has built my whole life with his two hands and telling him I am nothing of what he expected me to be when I told my mother that I was in love with a woman. She wept on our kitchen table and said, it wasn't normal. Normal. I asked her, what does it even mean to actually be normal? In elementary, it was normal for parents to pack their kids peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and I was the abnormal kid who had to sit outside by themselves because I was the weirdo with the peanut allergy. And the first time, I made out with my boyfriend in the seventh grade. I called him the next day and told him I didn't want to do it again because I kind of felt like a hoe. And he broke up with me. He got with a girl the next day that didn't mind him sucking her face. I found out. I went to the park where he played basketball with his friends. I stopped the game, smacked him in front of his boys, and I called him an asshole. Later, I was told by teachers that behavior for girls actually isn't normal. I figured out at an early age doing things normally isn't as fun as breaking all the rules. And these days, there are a lot of things that just shouldn't be normal. Like, it shouldn't be normal for you to shove someone deep into a closet and expect them to learn how to love themselves with the lights off. It shouldn't be normal for someone to have to choose between who they want to spend the rest of their life with and keeping their family for the rest of their life. Bullying shouldn't be normal. Hate crimes shouldn't be normal. Waiting for the Supreme Court to decide whether or not I could marry the only woman on this planet who has ever put my nerves in suspension shouldn't be normal. And what especially shouldn't be normal is that prickly cacti shit that grows on the outside of potatoes when they have sat in your kitchen for too long. It's weird, it's creepy, and it makes me feel highly uncomfortable. But people like you say it is natural and normal. Personally, keeping something in my kitchen that looks like a venereal disease isn't really my thing, but I'm not one to be a potatoist either. So I don't touch it. I turn my head and I walk away, because what a potato becomes isn't really my business anyway. So if holding my wife's hand makes you feel weird, creeped out, or highly uncomfortable, don't touch us, turn your head, and walk away, because what I do in my bedroom isn't really your business anyway. I vow never to love my wife normally. She will never feel like a habit or a routine. I will always touch her with desperate hands when I say I love you. It will never sound synonymous to goodbye. She will never blend with any of my other thoughts or memories. She will stand out, because it is too much to not choose a love that is extraordinary. It is too much to not say I do and actually mean I do. Some say coming out of the closet is a much too scary task. I say it is much more frightening living my life in darkness.
Speaking of on the move, I didn't mention where my family moved here from. My parents and my big brother moved to the United States from the country of Sri Lanka. Have people heard of Sri Lanka? Okay, it's always a mixed bag when I ask that question in groups of people. My people are Tamil. We've lived in this country. My family's lived in this country for decades now. A lot of Tamil people left Sri Lanka in the 80s, 90s, early 2000s due to the war that was going on there. This is a poem that I wrote last year talking about some of the history and some of the current issues going on there. It's called How to Enjoy Your Vacation to a Country That Says It Won the War. While planning your journey, accept that ethics are not included in the price of your ticket. Tell yourself Your currency is helping the country. Do not question government control of the tourism industry. When researching your destination, skip the sections on families and camps. Book a tour, even if the army will not give them back their land. Never ask why killing fields have been converted into resorts run by the military. Learn the dominant language, which translates war criminals into heroes. Make eye contact with soldiers and police in the Northeast. Inhale island steam from export quality tea. Exhale torture, sexual violence, and surveillance as ongoing strategies. Speak freely in public in your accent of opportunity. When talking about the people, identify them all as Sri Lankans. Do not stare too long at the survivors of genocide. Do not use that word at all. Gaze into the sea that greets occupied Tamil homeland and name it paradise. Collect souvenirs celebrating elephants so your friends envision beauty, not mass atrocities. Define tourist as, none of this involves me. Take photos of every sunset. Always have your passport handy. Keep your conscience secure in the hotel, safe.
I'm gonna ask if we can give Gowri another praise around and give the energy up. Woo! So on the move, and you hear on the National Mall, and I recognize that it's a bit warm and we're outdoors, and you probably had heard a slew of different topics, and you're hitting this one, and it sounds like, how does it make sense? So I want to share with you all, in terms of my queerness and my journey of being queer, it has everything to do with being on the move. It has everything to do with having to survive or making decisions that require you to move from one place to the other, when sometimes home feels so far away, or when it is the closest, it still doesn't feel like home. Because home is constantly a wonder of, is there safety? Is there acceptance? Is there tolerance? Is there a way for anyone to embrace me? And is there any way to love? And so opening up with love, I wanted to share something that really made me think more deeply today. Some of y'all might have heard this event happening, which is that Jay-Z dropped a new album. Y'all heard that? Yes, you did. Yes, I'm going to bring it up. Yes. So real quickly, I just want to share that on one of his tracks, he featured his mother on the track. And I want to share this with you before I do my second poem, which is called Survival. And so in this song that they had collaborated together, it was an admission of her sexuality, of her queerness. His line goes, Mama had four kids, but she's a lesbian. Had to pretend so long that she's a thespian. Had to hide in the closet so she medicate. Society's shame and the pain was too much to take. Cried tears of joy when you fell in love. Don't matter to me if it's him or her. And in the track, this is her poem. Living in the shadow, can you imagine what kind of life it is to live? In the shadows, people see you as happy and free, but because that's what you want them to see. The world is changing and they say it's time to be free. But you live with fear of just being me. Living in the shadow feels like a safe place to be. No harm for them, no harm for me, but life is short and it's time to be free. Love who you love because life isn't guaranteed. So in this next poem I would like to share with you is about my experience living in DC as a queer woman of color and trying to survive every day as a queer woman of color walking these streets. On some days, I love to meet new people in random places. In this city, walking can be a mode of communication, but for a queer woman of color, every step is like Morse code. Anything can be seen as sending signals. There are just some places my body prefers to keep quiet, prefers to look ahead, prefers that no one look, speak, or even breathe at me, my head sideways, tilted at a slight angle, because most days, walking queer can mean violence. It means that at any given moment, any given space, cis men of all shapes and sizes will come at me and my girlfriend sideways in all directions. They'll catcall my partner before ever knowing her first name. And when she speaks up for herself, call these men out on the unwanted remarks as their tongue coils like the barrel of a gun. They'll fire rounds of their insecurity like, damn, it's a compliment. You can't take a compliment and continue to berate her for talking back.
It's triggering. It's psychological, emotional, and even physical warfare. Like when a white man in khaki shorts and boat shoes on U Street dares to stick a piece of paper in my partner's top and says it's just flirting. My fists curls up. I feel a burning anger, like the only resolution is to fight violence with violence. My body can't contain itself from being harassed and witnessing assault of any kind. And I know I should be giving him bell hooks instead of my left ones, but not even, thank you. I should be giving him bell hooks instead of my left ones, because most days we are violated on the streets. Not even sidewalks are wide enough for safe spaces. No prayer that I can stomach to keep her safe from the onslaught of gaze, the straight whistles flying freely from misogynistic lips, and the hissing threats of rape or sounds that send chills down my spine, and I constantly agonize over not having more of a backbone to withstand the heaviness of this violence. So I wait to get home. I hurry into the bed that we share, hold her under the covers. I tell her I love you as prayers to lift us into sunrises. It's the only way I know how to keep carrying ourselves through the violence, that while the mainstream rejoices over same-sex marriages, all we are really trying to do is survive walks around our neighborhoods.
Hello. So I have a series of poetry entitled My American Father. There's three parts to it, and I'm going to do the first part here. And I always write a new part when I'm in a different part in my life, and my relationship with my father has evolved. So this first part I wrote in 2009, and it was still when I was still trying to figure out the language of what this tension was between me and my father. And I have a women's studies degree, a BA and a master's. And so women's studies really helped me to formulate the language in order for me to start healing and kind of reassemble this relationship with my father. I've swallowed so much pride that the confines of my stomach only grumble wasted dignity and the word daddy in between desperate attempts of regurgitation. This poem stands juxtaposed with my critical tears in a stunted critical condition, too critical for movement except for when immigrated fathers don't feel good enough for Americanized children, and when Americanized children don't feel good enough for immigrated fathers. And I wonder, Daddy, if someone would have told you it was gonna be this hard, would you have stayed? Because you've aged drastically, and the permanent creases on your forehead only show timelines of your struggle. You work your ass to own up to an American dollar, but you've been slipping, as each dollar went to us first. First place should always feel rewarding, but as first generation children, I would have took second or third or hell, maybe even none at all. And Daddy, amongst America, branding inadequate confidence into your hard work, you forgot to tell me you love me first. Amongst American standards, stapling your immigrant lips shut with deferred dreams, you forgot to teach me the tongues of our ancestors, and I'm left exposed with red and white stripes down my wrist, a blue heart and eyes full of shooting star tears, because my struggle, Daddy, has nothing to do with my golden skin, has nothing to do with a third world bending their backs to reach first. How could you tell me that I'm not so different from you when I was born, birthmarked with privilege, and you, born nothing but a brown man, born nothing but a yellow man, but these days you turn nothing but all black, a shadow daddy. I would have stopped you if it meant you being an American first before my father. I would have never accepted the big houses and fancy cars if it meant you hiding behind them, if it meant living in the same house with just a floating body with no substance, daddy. You didn't have to throw your bottle dreams into the ocean in hopes that it would float onto American soil. Because now, our conversations consist of me spitting standards onto your beliefs and piercing your intelligence with you don't understand who ever even gave you the chance to speak. I'm sorry I was the white man before your child. I'm sorry I was another staple on your lips and a conversation too heavy to speak. I want to say more to you than just bullshit about student loans and Sunday afternoon football games. I want to tell you about all the times my heart has been broken and how it could have been prevented if I just stayed daddy's number one. So daddy, I'm here to take back my title I'm here to blow love poems down your spine to help you stand taller as my father. I'm putting on my chinelas and racing across country, hitting every flagpole in this nation and replacing the American flag with your picture. Let's show them, Daddy. Let's show them what it's like to really dream.
Have people heard of found poetry before, or found poems? So found poems can come in very different shapes and sizes. One way to do found poems is to do something like pick up a book that you have or a newspaper and look through and just take phrases or sentences or just words that you want to use and craft a poem out of that. You can also take entire pieces of text and play with them and turn those into found poems. So this is a found poem I wrote, or rather found, on Earth Day this year. I was visiting family, and we were at the Bruce Museum in Greenwich, Connecticut. And I was reading an exhibit on sedimentary minerals and rocks and learning lots of things. And I found myself reading one of the curator's signs explaining some of the principles of sedimentary minerals and rocks. And I thought, you know, I feel like this paragraph would work if I just pulled out one phrase and put another phrase in its place. So what I've done here is taken any instance of the phrase sedimentary minerals and rocks and changed it to people of the global majority, which is another term for people of color. People of the global majority are extremely varied, differing widely in texture, color, and composition. In total, these people cover about 3/4 of the Earth's surface. Nearly all are made of materials that have been moved from a place of origin to a new place of deposition. The distance moved may be a few feet or thousands of miles. Most people of the global majority form in layers or strata. Many contain fossils.
I'm still lost. I don't have a found poem, but I have a couple of things before my last poem for today. First of all, once again, my name is Dia Bui. Lived in D.C. for 7 years, just recently moved to New York. I joined an agency called the Soze Agency, and one of our really proud accomplishments is partnering with 4.US to put on Immigrant Heritage Month. And so if y'all didn't know, this is the last day of Immigrant Heritage Month. I'm wearing the shirt, I Stand With Immigrants. I have stickers to give out. I'm more than happy to share. I'm proud to do so. I have stickers with I Am an Immigrant, I Stand With Immigrants. And it's so appropriate for On the Move today at the National Mall in Washington, D.C. So please feel free to take some. We'd love for you to share with your friends and family. If you stand with immigrants, if you are an immigrant, we celebrate you. We are the fabric of this country among many, many groups and folks. I see somebody walking in with I'm an Immigrant t-shirt. Yes. All right. So more than happy to do that. I just want to give a shout out to the youth of color who come from immigrant families who are here today that I had a blessing to work with. There's an Asian American lead. Young people, if you can show yourself, let them know that you're here. Ish, I know it's being forced. Thank you. I'm Vietnamese. My family comes from Vietnam. They were part of the boat refugees who came to the U.S. So when I think about migration, I think about how people move and the reasons for why they move. And a lot of it had to do with survival. So my story is about survival, and it continues to build. It will be about survival. And so this poem that I wrote more than a decade ago when I started this journey in poetry is called The Anthology, and I love to close this out with this poem. And as I'm working on putting together a collection of poems, this will be a part of it. The anthology is dedicated to the real-life stories and struggles of the following Southeast Asian women. I honor their strength, courage, and wisdom. They are Tham Minh Thinh Nguyen, my mother, who was a refugee from the Vietnam War, Denise Alfonso, author of To the End of Hell, One Woman's Struggle to Survive the Cambodia Khmer Rouge, and Lillian Eletto, the mother of the late Joseph Eletto, who was killed in a hate crime in 1998. I've been writing about the stories that matter to me the most. Unlike fictional novels, these stories are undeniably profound, and the English classes with the all-American teachers do not understand what it means to have an identity hyphenated Vietnamese American. I've been writing about
the issues that matter to me the most, about the people who risked their lives for refuge but have never found it, the war that gave birth to the refugees who sought for refuge but have never found it. My homeland is still struggling for freedom and equality. My country is still divided between simplicity and democracy. The poor are on their hands and knees while conscious citizens are dying to speak. Where are the human rights for the Vietnamese? I've been writing about the struggles that matter to me the most, like those that belong to my mother who escaped Haiphong, Vietnam in 81 and barely made it past the coast, drifting solemnly at sea with no mother, with no father, with no brother, no sister. She was holding on to the hands of strangers crowded on a small wooden boat and with no food and with no water and with no idea whether or not she would live or die. And only by the grace of hope, she was able to survive. I've been writing about her story as I wipe tears from my eyes, crying because I know the pain that she has will never die. She gave birth to her first child just so hope would never die. And in America she trusted, the America that gave her two shifts and two jobs instead of an opportunity for education. Her America told her, your opportunity is in assimilation, remember, because this is your education. And for most of my life, all she has ever known is upward mobility through her bare hands. On the day that I was born, she held me in her arms and whispered, you will not suffer as I have. You are an American. I'm Vietnamese American. So I've been listening to the voices of my surrounding communities, from those who understand the fall that murdered the spirits of the free, like my Khmer brothers and sisters carrying on the devastations of their mothers and fathers from the same war that gave birth to ruthless leader, the Red Rouge with the red rifles and the red hands and the red bloodstains on the killing fields and broken lands. A wife can never forget the images of her husband being slaughtered. As much as she tries, she can't. And in her memories are images of her daughter dying from hunger. A mother can never forget. As much as she tries, she can't. So I've been learning from the elders who come before me, seeking peace from the unanswered American dream, like the mother of a Filipino postal worker whose son was shot 9 times in broad American daylight. So I asked why. Why is a brother too Asian and not just American? So now I've been speaking about the issues that matter to me the most. In all struggles of life, we must remain strong. So please remember these words deeper than your hearts. Keep on fighting. Do not be afraid. Makipaka, huang matagot. Makipaka, huang matagot. Write and speak about the stories that matter to you the most.
One more poem. Are y'all still good, hydrated? Good. So I was talking about the different parts and the different parts of my life where I write poems to my father. I actually will be back on the stage at 2:45 with Reggie Cubico. We're doing a conversation on what it is to be Filipino and queer and other poems. So I will do the other poems there, but I wanted to do this poem because particularly now in my life, I just started identifying as being trans about a year ago, and it's not something that I have come out and told my parents yet, because coming out as being gay was hard enough, and that took about 10 years of healing. So I'm going to do this poem now, which is the first poem I've ever written about identifying as being trans, sort of to my father, hoping he hears me all the way in California. Some nights, I wake up choking to the woman inside of me trying to claw her way out of my mouth. She waits until I am sleeping because it is the only time I do not try to forget her. Sometimes, when I am alone, I can hear her weeping in between the times I inhale and exhale. When I bind my chest, I feel more than just the suffocation of my body. I feel her inside of me gasping for air. I know she is terrified. I am trying to squeeze her out of me for good. For a while, I tried. I swallowed her in front of other men to not seem weak. I stiffened up every time I felt her welling up behind my eyes. Used her as a scapegoat the times anger was the only prayer in my mouth. Blamed her for the depression, the anxiety, the dysphoria, the dirty looks in public restrooms and fitting rooms for being a goddamn box to check on paperwork. I hated her for having the audacity to stay even after I demanded her to leave. I also mourned and I grieved. I didn't know how to say goodbye. I didn't know if I had to. When my therapist told me that I have internalized misogyny, I cried until the woman in me finally poured out of my eyes and onto the floor. She has never said, "I told you so." She has only ever offered me a book of poems written by a person I used to be, and now, here, in front of this mirror that I beg to tell me lies, I am desperately looking for something that resembles something familiar, but I've only ever performed my poems in a higher pitch, and I fear a lower frequency will have me relearn what it means to be quiet when all I want to do is scream, "I am here, this is me," but my refusal to remember her is also my refusal to become a man who does not fall victim to fragile masculinity. To be a man does not mean to forget all the parts of me that is woman, that is soft, that is compassionate, that is the only version of myself I've ever been damn proud of to become. The day that I can embrace my femininity will be the day I have stepped into my true masculinity. I would be lying if I said the noise of patriarchy does not keep me up at night. Sometimes I let her out before I go to bed. We do not speak. I do not remember the last time I looked her in the eye, but she just lies next to me, quiet. She puts her arms around me and reminds me I am not alone, and sometimes it is the only time I can be put to sleep. To dismiss her is to dismiss the fact that she is the reason why I am still alive. I am nothing without the parts of me I have been and will become. I am nothing without the woman who lives inside of me.
All right. Let's give it up for Jerica Escoto, everybody. Let's welcome back to the stage for a final Capturing Fire battle. Let's give it up for Gary Kay, Dia Bowie, and Jerica Escoto. Could I ask someone to snap a photo of someone? Thank you so much. I'm Reggie Cabico. Yeah, you will see me perform with Jerica. He and I will be performing at 2:45 right here. Group photo. Thank you so much. Big shout out to the Smithsonian Latino Center, Asian Pacific American Center, AAA, which is not what you think, the American Anthropological Association, with collaboration of Anacostia Community Museum, National Museum of American History, On the Move Advisory Committee, Youth Advisory Council, the National Park Service, WAMU, United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, poets and writers, and all of our ancestors. And thank you so much. We will see you very, very soon. I need a drink. I'm single and available. So if you have a brother, an uncle, a great-great-grandfather, or someone who has beer and or ice cream, I also do shiatsu. Thank you. And big shout out to Shessie, our fabulous tech, and Olivia Carnaval, and Sojin Kim, and Amalia, and all the folks at Folklife. Thank you.
have to sit? Is it okay if I stand up? I'm probably not going to sit down. I'll sit down in a second, but probably when I...